I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, I want to thank Springdale High School and their school board for hosting us here. I want to thank in particular Superintendent Jim Rawlins and the principal, Pete Jinks. I know it was kind of last minute for Springdale. You know, we started a 400-person venue. We had to go to a 1,200-person venue. Here we are at a 2,200-person venue. I hope we're going to be able to accommodate everyone. While I'm in the business of welcoming and thanking people, I want to welcome and thank two particular people that are important to me, my parents, Lynn and Avis Cotton. And I also want to thank in particular one person who I just had the pleasure of meeting backstage, Caitlin Moses. Caitlin, please. Caitlin, I tell you what, please come up on stage here. So I know Caitlin is responsible for helping spread the word about this event tonight and getting a lot of you here, and I want to thank her for that. Caitlin and I had the opportunity to visit a couple weeks ago, and I apologize for a misunderstanding and an inconvenience whenever we had a meeting canceled at my staff. No, don't go anywhere. So to express my appreciation and my gratitude, I just wanted to give her a chance to ask the first question.
Well, I would actually like to delegate my question to somebody else. Right over here.
Who did you want?
This lady here.
The lady in the red?
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks, Caitlin. Yes, ma'am.
My name is
Your name is Amy?
Amy Gillespie.
And where are you from, Amy?
I am from Bella Vista.
Thank you for driving down.
Give her a microphone.
Just hold on. Let her speak.
Give her a mic.
Mike.
You can.
Mike.
Just, we can hear her. Speak up, Amy. Come on. Everybody, just let her speak. Let her speak.
So I want to thank you for joining us today. And as I said, I'm a small business owner from Bella Vista, and I'm also a native Arkansan. But my husband is the main provider for our family of four. He's an engineer at a factory here in Rogers that makes packaging for Tyson. He's also an immigrant. He has legally resided in the U.S. since 2000. He's paid taxes. He's contributed to the economy. He initially moved here on an H-1B visa and received his green card in 2009 after a lengthy and a very expensive vetting process that included background checks, employment and education verification, biometrics, blood tests, STD tests, and many interviews. Since that time, we've started a family right here in the U.S. We moved back to Arkansas in 2012. We bought a house. We've contributed to the economy. And according to a study by the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation, immigrants contributed $3.9 billion, with a B, billion. And that's just to the Arkansas economy in 2010. That spending was concentrated really heavily here in Northwest Arkansas, where businesses like Walmart are bringing in skilled immigrants from all over the world.
Yes.
People like us are coming here legally to build a life. Your proposed legislation to cut the number of green cards issued, it threatens our happy life here. So my questions to you are, how specifically will your legislation affect green card renewals? People like my husband who are coming up for renewal here. Do you think it is right that law-abiding, contributing, tax-paying members of your local communities now must live in fear that our entire lives may be uprooted? What would you say to my American children, my daughter right here, who fear that our family might be separated and their daddy might be sent away, or that they might have to leave the only home that they have ever known? These are real fears, Senator, every one of them. What message are you sending to families like mine? Can you look at my little girl, look her in the eye, and tell her that we're not welcome here, that we're not valued in the state of Arkansas or in this country?
Amy, you are. So, Amy, thank you for sharing your story. Of course, you and your husband and your children are welcome here. My legislation wouldn't affect you at all. So your husband, you say your husband first came on an H-1B program, right? So my legislation doesn't affect a single employment-based visa or green card into this country. And once you have a green card, it still gives preferences to spouses and to unmarried minor children. And I think that we need to reform a lot of the programs, like the H-1B program. It sounds like your husband came here, got an education, is very high skilled. Those are the kind of visas that we want to give out under the H-1B program. There's no doubt that in the H-1B and the H-2A and the H-2B programs, there have been abuses. There have been abuses of American workers. There have been abuses of the foreign workers who come here under those programs. But my legislation would apply only to non-employment-based immigration. And once you have a green card, or once you're a citizen, or once you're married to a citizen, it would have no effect whatsoever. Only newly issued ones, and we'd still be issuing over 500,000 green cards a year, making us still the most generous country in the world when it comes to welcoming immigrants to our shore. Okay, so let's move on. Let's move on to the next. Hold on. We have another very special person here in the audience that I want to recognize. I don't know who it is. Let's find out who the special person is. So raise your hand if you drove more than 2 hours to be here. Over 2 hours to be here. Keep it up if you drove over 3 hours. Keep it up if you drove over 4 hours. Where are you from, ma'am? Conway, sir, we had one down here. Where are you from, sir? Little Rock beats Conway. Is anybody further away than Little Rock? Ma'am, where are you? Benton? Benton beats Little Rock. Arkadelphia? Arkadelphia beats Benton. Okay. Sir, why don't you stand up? We'll take Arkadelphia. We'll take Arkadelphia.
My name is Brian DeBuss. I'm a constituent of your
state.
Give him a microphone.
Let's speak, please.
I'm a constituent of yours from Arkadelphia. I was a science professor at Washtenaw Baptist University. Now I'm a grant writer. Thank you for your military service and your concern for our national security. I agree with you that we should take a stronger stance against ISIS, and I understand your desire. I understand your desire to improve our military hardware and armed forces, but these are traditional responses to traditional threats. The Department of Defense says that climate change is a threat multiplier that will increase frequency and cost of military action as countries around the world struggle to cope with more frequent extreme weather, drought, famine, disease, and climate refugees. The Pentagon has even said that all military planning and preparation activities must consider climate change. At an energy policy discussion 3 years ago, you acknowledged that climate change is real and that humans are responsible. Given your desire to bolster national defense and to save us the expense of future interventions, what are your specific plans to address climate change now?
Thank you for the question. So, the questions about climate change, and specifically in the context of our military and security threats, which are very real. If you look around the Eurasian supercontinent, people get more and more into the coastal areas, which creates more and more instability if you have floods or tsunamis or what have you. I would like, though, to open the lens a little bit and talk about climate change and responses more broadly than just the military and security, if that's okay. So as you said, you know, 3 years ago, I said, as I've long said, that the great weight of evidence shows that the Earth's climate has warmed up in the last couple hundred years. I think there's good evidence, and it's a reasonable inference that 200 years of industrialization by human activity has contributed to that in part. What I have doubts about are the feasibility of some of the proposals to address that and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Now, from when we spoke 3 weeks or 3 years ago about that, we were still just on kind of the beginning edge of the surge in natural gas production across America. Greenhouse gas emissions have fallen over the last couple decades in the United States. And that's in part because as we produce more natural gas, and as the cost of natural gas has gone down, it's better than coal. And natural gas is a cleaner fuel than coal is. It's also in part because we have new cutting-edge coal-fired technologies like we have right down in Southwest Arkansas. The plant in Fulton, Arkansas is one of the most advanced, one of the cleanest coal-burning plants in America. And we should promote that kind of proven, feasible technology in addition to nuclear technology, which is also proven. Now, I hear a lot of people saying solar and wind and hydro. But those are an important part of an energy solution, no doubt about it. But they're intermittent. They're intermittent. It doesn't always, the wind doesn't always blow, the sun doesn't always shine. What we have to do to promote that is to focus on more basic scientific research. Like we need to be able to have energy storage techniques. So you can store the electricity that's generated by wind or by solar power, and you can use it in reversible electrical grids. So panels that are on homes can be put into the system when they're not used in the home. It's that kind of basic scientific research that's going to make things like solar and wind power more effective. So, hold on, folks. Let him. I'll tell you what, I'm not going to commit to increasing funding for that in particular. I'll focus on making our energy research focused on that kind of basic scientific research, because that's where I think our dollars are best spent. Okay, I tell you what, I know we obviously got a lot of people. I know from some of the comments I've heard today and also the input we got in our office that healthcare is on a lot of people's minds. So why don't we do this? If you've got a question about healthcare, raise your hand. And I'll run around to get more people in. Let's get more people in. I'll go around and I'll take like 4, 5, 6 comments and questions about healthcare. I'll answer them. We'll go more rounds if you want to do that. Okay? Right here, ma'am, in the yellow. You want to? Yes, ma'am, right here.
Are you going to pick the other people now, or should I go?
No, go ahead. Comment, question, we'll go around, and then I'll address them all in the end. All right, let's let her ask her question. Let's see if the AV people can find microphones and bring them out. But let this lady ask her questions. Maybe if we can find a microphone or two and have them here for the front, but also up for the top as well. Is that good? But right now we can take this lady's question. Go. Let's.
Right.
You should go ahead and go.
Well, in that case, hello, Senator Cotton. My name is Katie McFarland. I'm from Springdale, Arkansas. My response to your question is:
stand next to you.
Yes, stand next to you.
Go down and give her the mic.
My question is regarding the Affordable Care Act, which is also
called. Well, we got one already right here. Okay, start from the top, Katie.
Please forgive me.
That's okay.
All right, well, thank you for being here, first of all, Senator Cotton. And my name is Katie McFarland. I'm from Springdale, Arkansas. And before I get into it, I would like everyone who is affected by the Affordable Care Act and affected by health care to stand up. You couldn't tell, me too. All right, well, my family has been in the Ozarks since the 1800s. We are historically a Republican family, we're a farming family, we're an NRA family, we're an Army family. My uncles and my great-grandparents and my grandparents all were in the Army, Korea, World War II. Now, aside from inheriting their patriotism and their work ethic, I unfortunately inherited a incurable genetic connective tissue disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, or EDS. EDS weakens my heart and my veins. It paralyzes my stomach. It affects and weakens my immune system. I qualify for Medicare, but unfortunately, it's useless for me, since only two of my doctors, who are the only doctors in over a 500-mile radius who are familiar with my condition, accept Medicare. Without the coverage for pre-existing conditions, I will die. That is not hyperbole. I will die. Without the protections against lifetime coverage caps, I will die. Without the Obamacare or ACA exchange healthcare plan that I have elected to continue my COBRA or continue after my COBRA, that is going to go into effect when I turn 26 this coming Sunday, I will die. Now, you have talked a lot about exercising caution in the repeal of the ACA, and that the repeal cannot happen with replacement. You are a proponent of repeal and replace. But it doesn't seem to me that you or your party seem to be doing much to ensure the replacement part. The entire GOP Senate Thank you. Thank you. Sorry if I keep...
No, no, please.
Arthritis is kicking in. The entire GOP Senate voted recently, the 12th of January, on a budget resolution that would advance the... Thank you. That would advance a repeal of the act, but no similar resolutions were advanced to suggest replacement actions that would ensure the continuation of coverage for people with pre-existing conditions like myself. Continuing on that note, thank you. Your colleague, Senator Toomey, forgive my pronunciation, recently compared people like myself that go to companies with pre-existing conditions to houses that have already burned down. In addition to this, you made a statement on the 3rd of December, 2015, saying that today the Senate took action to ease Arkansans' Obamacare burdens by voting to fully repeal this unworkable law. I was pleased the final bill passed the Senate included a provision to defund Planned Parenthood, which, by the way, is where I get my cancer screenings. Thank you. Which is an organization who has proven itself unworthy of government support. This vote was another important blow to Obamacare, but the fight isn't over. Rest assured, I am committed to repealing Obamacare and replacing it with a better system that truly makes healthcare more affordable and more accessible. But my specific question is, Senator Cotton, you talk a lot about the repeal, but you have not gone into specifics on replacement. So my question is, will you commit today to replacement protections for those Arkansans like me who will die or lose their quality of life or otherwise be unable to be participating citizens trying to get their part of the American dream? Will you commit to replacements in the same way that you have committed to the repeal?
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Katie. Let's take a couple more comments or questions about health care.
Answer the question.
How about we do this? I know, hold on, some of you have your hands up. Why don't we let Katie decide? Do you want me to address your points now, or do you want me to take more points?
I think you should listen to them.
Okay. So, Katie, I'm committed after repealing Obamacare to health care reform that fixes...
In what way will you prevent coverage gaps?
You asked everyone...
Thank you.
You asked everyone to stand...
Will you prevent coverage gaps? Will you have a replacement in place to prevent coverage gaps the second the repeal goes through?
You asked everyone to stand up if they had been impacted by Obamacare. And a lot of you did, not all of you did, which was a mistake. Everyone in this room has been hurt or helped.
I have only been helped. Obamacare saved my life, Senator.
Nobody here has not been affected by Obamacare.
Yes,
so
because it saved my life, Senator.
And you talk about some of the problems with our health care system that predated Obamacare, like a pre-existing, like the inability of people to get pre-existing condition coverage. So, Katie, you were talking about some of the problems with our health care system before Obamacare. Lifetime caps, or the inability of people with pre-existing coverage to get coverage. Those are real problems. I'm not here to defend the health care system before Obamacare. Nor am I here to deny that Obamacare has helped many Arkansans. But it's also hurt many Arkansans as well. You know these people, they're your neighbors, they're your coworkers, they go to your churches. Katie, what I'm committed to is making sure that people with conditions as serious as yours or young, healthy people all have access to affordable, quality, personalized care. So I'm committed, and you talk about the transition period. I'm committed to making sure that we have an effective, smooth transition period.
In what way will you ensure this, Senator, specifically?
So let's talk about a few of the things you discussed. You said you're going to turn 26 later this year?
On Sunday.
Sunday. So, early happy birthday. So, most people, to include most insurance companies, are fine with that provision, because it keeps young people in the healthcare system. I'm pretty sure that that's going to be around after we repeal Obamacare.
In what way will you ensure that, Senator?
Well, insurance companies today can't exclude someone under the age of 26. I support that provision in the future as well. On pre-existing conditions, in the past, if you didn't have insurance, an insurance company could refuse to give you coverage from a pre-existing condition. Any approach we take is going to ensure that people who have continuous coverage cannot.
How will you ensure that, though, Senator, specifically? You're just restating my question, Senator.
Insurance companies can't do that today.
No, they can't, but if you repeal the ACA, they will be able to, unless you take measures to prevent that. What specifically will you do to prevent that?
That if you have insurance today, you cannot be denied insurance tomorrow.
I'm not asking about today, Senator. I'm asking about once the ACA is repealed. What will you do, Senator, to prevent that in the future once you repeal the ACA?
So if you have... If you regulate insurance companies to say that they cannot deny someone with a pre-existing condition if that person has insurance, then they can't deny you when you move from one job to another or when you move from a
job. That specific regulation is the ACA, Senator, so what will you do to continue that after you repeal it? That is what I'm asking. Will you answer the question, sir?
It's called a continuous coverage requirement.
I know what it's called, Senator. I'm very familiar with healthcare with my condition. I'm not asking what it's called. I'm not asking what will happen today. What I'm asking is, once you repeal the regulations in place to protect people like me that are in the ACA, what specifically will you do to ensure in the future that we have those protections? I'm not asking about today. I'm not asking about what they're called. I'm asking about in the future, once you repeal the ACA.
In the future system,
please,
there is...
Senator, let me finish asking my question. I don't know you, and I don't appreciate you apologizing on my behalf, sir. Anyways. As I was saying, Senator, what specifically will you do once you have repealed the ACA, which you have pledged many, many times over the years to do? What will you do to ensure that the protections inherent in the ACA, aka Obamacare, will continue?
Some of those same insurance regulations that we've been talking about will also be present in the future system as well.
Can you guarantee that? How will you guarantee that?
That's what I support. That's what I'm working towards.
I know you support that, Senator, but what I'm asking is how will you ensure it? You've pledged yourself to repeal, but you have not talked much about the replacement.
We'll go through the legislative process, and I'll make it clear what I support and what I don't support, what I think is good for Arkansas, what's not good for Arkansas. I think, Katie, we have a lot of folks still, a lot of folks who still want to ask questions, so are we okay?
Well, before they answer theirs, I would appreciate if you actually answered mine.
Why don't we go to this lady right here?
But I can see you won't, so.
The lady right here in the blue shirt. Can you want to come down, ma'am? I mean, if you can speak up and everybody will just let her ask her question.
Myself. I am part of Better Medicare Alliance Group over all United States of America. I'm an ambassador, and I'm angry. We have an office in Washington, D.C., if you'd like to go visit us. I have a yes or no question for you. I could tell you three members of my family, including me, that would be dead, and homeless if it was not for ACA. I'm an angry constituent. You work for us. Question. I could tell you since 1991 our health insurance woes, and I'm not going to do that. My husband with dementia, Alzheimer's, and plus multiple other things. And you want to stand there with him at home, expect us to be calm, cool, and collective. Wow, what kind of insurance do you have? Senator Cotton, listen to this. We just did a photo shoot here in Springdale. We're going Medicare my way. Not your way, my way. I've got a husband dying, and we can't afford. Let me tell you something. If you can get us better coverage than this, go for it. Let me tell you what we have, plus a lot of benefits that we need. We have $29 per month for my husband. Can you beat that? Can you? With all the congestive heart failures and open heart surgeries and his, we're trying. $29 per month. And he's a hard worker. Now, $39 for me. Here's my question. I have sent you one message after the other, sir, about our family. And you know where we live? I don't live three hours from here. I don't live 2 hours from here. I live just down the road a few places from your office. And I have invited you into our home. And not a word except a classic, regular letter sent. Now, here's my question, yes or no. Will you come to my family's home? I promise you it will be safe. Sit down with the three of us and hear our stories from 1991 till now.
So, ma'am, I'll be happy to meet with you and hear more about your story. We've got staff here. Ma'am, we have... We'll make a decision about where we meet, but I'm happy to meet with you. Okay. We've got questions up here in the balcony. We haven't gone there yet.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Yes, I hear you loud and clear.
My name is Valerie Harris. I'm from Prairie Grove, Arkansas. I want to say I'm a teacher, first of all. Okay. I work in a residential facility in Fayetteville, and I work with special needs kids. I want to say this. I work three jobs, actually. And the reason I have to work two more jobs is because my health insurance at my first place of employment doubled in the last 3 years. I'd like to say that there are other stories, and there are a lot of people in Arkansas that do support Senator Cotton. And there are many people like myself, a single mom, okay? Single mom who pays taxes. My family came here many, many years ago from Italy, legally, okay? And thank you. My question is this. My son, I have four children, three that went to the University of Arkansas. My son is graduating. And he will be commissioned in the U.S. Air Force in May. My son has written a letter and given it to your staff over here because his detachment is requesting that Senator Cotton come and speak and be a distinguished guest at the commissioning ceremony. My question... Number one, I'd like to thank you for your service to this country. And I would like to tell you there are many people, the majority of people in Arkansas, that support you. And I'm asking that you read his letter. And his contact information is there. Thank you, Senator Cotton.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your son. Thank you very much for your son's service. We all appreciate and honor it, and we'll do everything to make sure he has the very best equipment and training and leadership that he can get. Why don't we go right here, ma'am, in the scarf? Yes, ma'am. And I would love to speak if we can make it fit in the schedule. Thank you for passing along the information.
Thank you, Senator Cotton, for being here today. First of all, I'm Mary Story from Fayetteville, and I am not a paid protester.
Mary, can I address that point that you just made?
Yes.
Like, I don't really care if anybody here is paid or not. You're all Arkansans, and I'm glad to hear from you. So, I know.
All right.
There's been some talk about that in the media. Some politicians have said that. I just want to say thank you to everyone for coming out tonight, whether you agree with me or disagree with me. This is part of what our country is all about.
Okay.
Okay, let's let Mary finish. Sorry to interrupt.
All right. I'm here, like all the people who came with me tonight, as a concerned citizen. and we are concerned because it appears that this administration is trampling our constitutional rights. I am a lifelong Arkansan. Five of my ancestors fought in the Revolutionary War. One of my ancestors signed the Declaration of Independence. And my 94-year-old father, who lives in Batesville, was awarded 7 Bronze Stars. For his contribution in the 82nd and the 101st.
Screaming Eagle.
Yes. He hit the last battle he fought to protect our democracy was the Battle of the Bulge. So my question to you, because I feel like our freedoms and our liberties are being threatened, I want to know if you, like Senators McCain and Graham, will call for an independent bipartisan commission investigate President Trump, his campaign, and his administration. Thank you.
So, thanks very much for your question and for your family's history of service. The short answer is, I'm already part of that very inquiry you're talking about. So, I'm a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And the last thing I did last week before the Congress recessed and we came home for this week was to spend over 3 hours in a hearing on this very topic. It was classified, but it has to be classified. I'm just telling you straight here. If we had a special committee in Congress or if we had an independent commission, it too would be classified because this information, It's just the nature of the material we're handling. This is just the nature of the information that we're handling. It's classified. It has to be classified. A second reason why I think the Intelligence Committee is the right venue. The Intelligence Committee has been investigating Russia and all of their malign activities to undermine confidence in our electoral system well into last year, and that continued after the election in November, and it's continued for the last month. So we already have a long head start. If you created a new organization, it would take probably at least 6 months to staff it up and do the background checks. This is simply the facts. So we would lose many months if we tried to create any kind of new organization, because the FBI would have to vet all the staff and do background checks. But I can assure you, look, I think most of you, I think everyone here probably knows that I don't think Russia is a partner or a friend or anything else. For many years, I've been warning about the threat Russia poses. And I would submit to all of you that we are doing our job on that committee. It is bipartisan, I heard someone ask. Mark Warner is the Democratic vice chair of the Intelligence Committee. He supports this approach for those very reasons. And we are committed to following the facts wherever they may lead us. I can trust you can take confidence in that. So no, ma'am, I do not. Unlike Lindsay and John, I support the investigation that we already have underway. Sir, you want to?
Thank you. My name is Chris Winsler. I'm from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Thank you for coming tonight, Senator Cotton.
Thank you, Chris.
The question I have involves everyone in this room. It is not about identity. It is not about what you do in the privacy of your home. It is not about anything but the future generation of America. I am deeply, deeply troubled by not only the debt under George W. Bush, but the doubling of the debt to $19.5 trillion passed by the 111th Congress through fiscal stimulus, ACA, and other measures. I hear the constituents here. Everyone is snipping for a piece of the pie and money. And this is the result of us spending ourselves into the poorhouse. My question is, sir.
Go ahead.
The facts are plain. The U.S. government has taken in more in tax revenue this year than it ever has, yet we still run a deficit. What are your specific solutions to help this nation pay down its debt and get back to level spending?
Thank you, Chris. Chris, thank you. It's a very important question. I think everyone here can agree that whether you're a Democrat or Republican or somewhere in between, that politicians in Washington have been spending way too much compared to what we take in for way too long. And Chris, you're right. Chris. Chris is right that it's not a problem that just started in the last 8 years either. It goes back much before that to Republican Congresses and Republican administrations as well. So the most important thing, I've had to bury people who were killed in war, so I don't want any more war either. But Chris, back to your question. I think the most important thing that we can do to get our budget back to balance is have a healthy, growing economy again. It's been growing at too slow a rate, with not enough job creation. Too many people are not in the workforce, are not earning a decent wage and paying taxes on that. If we had a healthy, growing economy, like we did in the late 1990s, and you can apportion the credit and blame however you want to a Democratic president or Republican Congress or some mix of the two, we would get it back a lot closer to balance. If we had a healthy, growing economy where more people were in the workforce and there were more people were taxpayers. That's the most immediate thing. Longer term, I know a lot of you here tonight obviously feel stress and anxiety about health care. Probably everybody does, given all the bureaucratic red tape you have to go through with any plan. But it's also, our healthcare system right now is not working for all of you as taxpayers either. Whether it's the Obamacare exchanges, or Medicare and Medicaid, or the Children's Health Insurance Program, or government employee health care. All that is the biggest pot of money that the government has. And we don't spend it efficiently. We don't spend it efficiently enough, and it doesn't deliver the value that you deserve as the beneficiaries of that. So those are the two most immediate things. This gentleman here was at the microphone early. I missed him, so let's go to this gentleman here.
Thank you very much. It's good to have you here. I'm sure your experience in the war zone almost prepared you for this. This is a pretty hostile crowd, as you can tell. The Tea Party...
I'm sorry, sir. What was your name?
I'm Dan Cootie from Fayetteville, Arkansas. And this is an overwhelming crowd. The Tea Party wave several years ago, obviously it's going to be swamped by a Democratic tsunami here this time. But I got to tell you, number one, clean coal is a myth. Number two, Americans spend twice as much on health care as the next most expensive country, and our outcomes are 17th in the world. I don't see why America, we're so egocentric. We can't look at every other industrialized nation in this world to see what they're doing and what we can learn from them. And number three, and I'll go. It didn't take 6 months to put 7 Benghazi committees together.
Thank you, Dan. Let me take them in turn. So we certainly have cleaner coal technology than we once did. But ladies and gentlemen, go to Southwest Arkansas and visit the plant in Fulton. Many people make a living off. And many working people are struggling to make ends meet, get their electricity from coal. Now, one reason why we have fewer greenhouse emissions now is that we have moved from coal to natural gas, which is a cleaner technology. So your second point, I would agree that we spend too much money inefficiently in our healthcare system. We can spend it much more efficiently if we reform our system in the right way and give power and choice back to all of you. But that's why. That's one reason why so many people come to the United States to get health care, because our health care system is the best in the world. Okay, and your third point was about Benghazi. I'll just say that the experience of the Benghazi Select Committee actually informs my thinking about the Senate Intelligence Committee moving forward, because it was badly delayed. Okay, we're going to move on. We haven't gone over here yet, so I think whoever was first in line up there.